All right, so again, my name is Todd Valor. I'm with the IBM ComServer Change team, and we're going to go over using packet trace to kind of identify CIP throughput problems, and maybe this will help you guys do some self-diagnosis without requiring the delay of delivering information to the lab here, or you know, at least you can follow along as we're doing some diagnosis for you. All right, so here we go. All right, the things we're going to cover today, we're just going to take a look at how we can identify throughput performance problems, what we can do to measure performance from a packet trace perspective. We're going to look at a data transfer, small section of packet flow, nothing in detail there. And then we're going to take a quick look at how the network latency and drop packets and window sizing affects throughput, and then some of the flags and things that we can look for in a packet trace. We're really just going to put all this together so when you do think that you've got a performance problem, you can take a look at a packet trace and hopefully identify that problem or determine that it's really not a networking problem. All right. So let's go do some debugging. The first thing we need to do is kind of identify what are performance issues? And there's really two kinds of performance problems that we see. One is where the data exchange is actually slow, and then the other performance problem is where the data exchange is so slow, it's basically non-functional. And when it becomes non-functional, then the connection gets aborted and your data transfer doesn't occur. We're really not going to focus on the terminating case. That we'll be able to see when we look at, you know, if we weren't making progress due to a network breakage, you know, where packets couldn't be received to the remote end, then that's a pretty obvious thing. When you look at it in a trace, you'll see a reset on the connection. So we're not going to focus on that. We're going to look more at what happens when we're dealing with network latency and maybe some dropped packets, but still a viable network connection. So what do we look at when we're looking at these performance issues? And the two main things or categories of things we want to look at when we're dealing with performance is what the network latency is. Network latency is probably, outside of application delays, it's the number one thing that can impact your performance. So what we really want to do is take a look at how that comes into play when data is being transferred. And you know, there's three ways we could really measure this. If we have a packet trace, we can actually look at the delta time between the SYN packets if the connection set up, because that's pretty much a one-for-one pack. A SYN packet goes across the network and a SYNAC is responded immediately. So that gives us a pretty good accurate measurement. Sometimes collecting a packet trace, there might be the connection might have been active for a long period of time and you didn't get the start of the connection. So when we format out the packet trace, our formatter actually gives you an average round trip time, which is kind of the summarized value, which is pretty accurate for the life of a connection. The other thing you can do is actually measure the delta between when a data packet is sent and when the acknowledgement for that data packet arrives. So we really have three ways to measure that. Anytime we're measuring the round trip time, the network latency is really just half of that, but the round trip time is really the important thing because nothing occurs in a TCP connection until a round trip time. If I send a packet and I need to wait on something from the remote side, then I truly have to wait the entire round trip time, not just the network latency for a single direction. And then the other thing that comes into play is bandwidth. There's really not a lot we can look at here other than how we can see, you know, take a look at how much data we can actually put into the pipe at any one point in time and how reliable our network is. But, you know, as the bandwidth increases, the amount of data that can be delivered by the network reliably is important in being able to transfer large volumes of data, you know, very rapidly. And we'll just take a look at where that number is displayed so you can see exactly how that comes into play. We won't go into detail a lot on the bandwidth. So the primary tool we have on ComServer ZOS is a packet trace. You know, externally on the network, you use a sniffer trace. We have a OSA ENTA trace, which is similar to a sniffer trace that's captured from the OSA's perspective. Our packet trace is the primary tool that we use here and that we request from customers. We have a nice formatting tool that formats these things out. When you're looking at TCP connections, the session report is probably the most important one when you're looking for performance problems. If you don't use the session report, you can actually format out the packet trace and look at the individual packet content. This would be more useful if you're concerned about the data content of the packets and you're looking at more protocol exchange from the application layer. For throughput problems, you're really just concerned about the delays between packets and flows that are occurring on the network, and the session report does a nice job of showing you that information, a very crisp, clean view, and the session report breaks down the packets by TCP connection. So when you look at the view, you're really just looking at a summary of the packets and the statistical information for a single connection, and then later connections will be separated on different pages and different sections. So this is really a nice report. We've done a lot here, and this is what we're going to focus on. So I'm just going to kind of give you a little glimpse of these, the header information that we display for each session, and then a little packet summary, and we'll look at these again later on. So this little session report, as you can see, we just gathered up 10 packets, were summarized. That was all that was in this little sample session we had. It gives you some remote and local IP addresses, and it gives you the remote and local port numbers in there. This is important if you gathered a packet trace but maybe didn't set up the collection filtering criteria to eliminate it down to a single connection. Maybe you weren't sure exactly what connection was going to have the problem. After the event occurs or the suspected event occurs, maybe you've gathered some more information that identifies a specific port or IP address that was involved. And so knowing this information allows you to go in here and find those. So we give you some timestamps and duration of the actual connection. The final state you can see in there is established. That's really not important other than it shows you that this connection never terminated within the scope of the trace. If we look further down, and this would just be scrolling down through the screen. So as we look further down in the IPCS output, we give you some information about the contents of the data flow itself. We try and summarize how many bytes were sent. We give you some bandwidth utilization. This is where we'll be looking at the bandwidth. We do determine that delay acts was enabled here, which I can explain later if there's questions on that. But we give you some segment statistics. Again, this was a little sample, so we have a lot of information. We'll see more later. But we kind of try and summarize the size of the packets that are flowing back and forth. Very small packets usually indicate that the applications are doing very small sends, not presenting large amounts of data to TCP/IP to deliver at any one point in time. So that can be key. Maybe there's some application tuning. Full-size segments, those are great. We're taking full advantage of the network, delivering data as fast as the network can sustain, and the application's giving us all the data. And so then any delays are most likely going to be in the network, and we can take a look at that. If we go on further down in the report, we give you some window statistics here. The window statistics are just trying to summarize some of the events that might have occurred where the windowing, the receive window that TCP uses as part of its flow control, came into play and maybe affected the rate of the transfer. Again, these are all zeros and kind of not very important in this display. We do show you, though, that what the advertised windows are. We give you some round trip time summaries. Again, there was no real data flow here in our little sample, so we don't have good values, but we'll see some later on. And a little bit further down, now we give you some real percentages information on particular events that occur. And if you look here where we say the number of packets and then the time spent, those two little sections, we're trying to give you some clock time values and the number of occurrences that these things happened. And these little symbols in there inside of the parentheses dictate later on when we actually look at the individual packets, these flaggings will repeat themselves in that packet flow when one of these events occurs. So, if we were to look at this particular thing, if we were concerned about duplicate acts, certainly we can see that you know, that kind of jumps out that there was 90% of the events that occurred here, the packets that flowed here, were duplicate acts. So, you know, from a flagging perspective, you can quickly look at the percentages and have a good idea of whether I need to look at retransmissions, because the percentage of retransmissions was very high, or out-of-order packets. Any of these particular flagging things, if the percentage is high, that's probably a good place to focus when you're starting to look for performance issues. And, you know, the time spent gives you a nice wall clock time. So if you're looking at a transfer that took a long period of time, you may find that there were some of those flagging activities that occurred very frequently, but other things actually consumed a large amount of time. So you really have to kind of take your best guess at what looks to be the most important. Typically, the largest amount of time is probably the area you want to focus on, just because time is the most relevant thing here, right? And moving on, the last section we have before we actually see the packets is we kind of try and summarize. Now what we're looking at is some of the flagging that occurs within an actual packet in the TCP header, the SYN bit, the S is the SYN bit, the SYN ACK. We see FINs, ACKs and FINs, resets and urgent flags. And so we try to summarize up how many of those we see percentages-wise and numbers-wise, and then we give you a time spent on that. And again, this is just sampling, so don't get distraught that these are all zeros. That doesn't mean anything. We have good values there later on. All right, and then the final section that you actually get in a session summary, a session report, is actually going to be the packet flow itself. So all that information we just looked at will be present for every connection that's encapsulated in the packet trace when you format out the session report. And then underneath of each one of those headings, you'll actually see the packets as we see here. And it's just a summary of the packets with just some key criteria or critical fields for you to be able to follow the flow of a packet that are going across on the session. You can see we have sequence numbers and acknowledgement numbers. Those are very important for TCP. We have the receive window, the data content, that we format out the delta time between the previous packet and this packet. We actually give you a real time stamp. The record number is actually the record number within the packet trace. So you can see, because these record numbers aren't the same, the raw packet trace contains packets outside of the session. When we formatted out the session report, then we only see packets for this TCP connection, and in this thing, there'd probably be other sessions reported and formatted out. We try to give you the current state of established or closed or SYN sent to show you what's occurring at the TCP session perspective. This particular thing has an interface number. This is not a specific interface number. We kind of accumulate interface numbers and report it. It's kind of a logical number. For IPv4, we have an IP identifier. This can become important when you're looking for out-of-order packets. It helps us to determine whether a packet was really a retransmission of a packet, or it was the first occurrence of a packet and the original packet got delayed. And I'll try and show you. I don't have a good example of that mapped out, but I'll try to explain that later when we're looking at a more realistic report. And then we've got round trip times. In this case, the round trip times non-measured, because these are just acknowledgments that are coming in. All right? So now we're going to actually look at that calculation of the network latency, and really, again, there was those three methods. One, the nice thing to do is just to look at the session report. We already looked at the header. So up in the header, when we have a real session in this case, we have an average round trip time and a final round trip time shown there. The average is the most important. The final round trip time can be skewed by delays at the end of the connection. So you really primarily focus on the average round trip time. So we've got, you know, a 0.194 round trip time, which in today's networking is actually pretty high, unless this is going across the WAN. Any local area connection is going to be very much smaller than that. But we can certainly look at that and determine our network latency. The delta time between the SYN and the SYN ACK, again, when the SYN is sent and received at the remote TCP Unless there's an error condition, we should get an immediate SYNAC response with no delays generated by the remote TCP. So this is an accurate measurement of our round trip time from a latency perspective. And we can see that the delta time between the SYN and the SYNAC in this case was extremely small. I suspect for that length of time that this is actually a same image, same MVS LPAR type of connection. That is extremely low. But we can certainly calculate the value there. Let me pop back up. So following right after the SYNAC, or the ACK-SYN, if you want to look at the flags in order of the display, then we have the third packet, which is the acknowledgement number, or the ACK for the SYNAC that was sent out. And notice that there's a 0.20 delta time there. That 0.20 is delay ACK kicking in the TCP protocol, which basically says, if I get a single packet in that carries some sequence number, and the SYN bit always carries is representative of a sequence number. So if I get a packet in that represents a sequence number, do not send an immediate acknowledgement. Wait to see if another data packet is going to arrive and try to acknowledge only every two data packets. We're trying to reduce the impact on the network of and the TCP endpoint of processing acknowledgements when we maybe can take advantage of acknowledging two packets at once. And the typical delay ACK is 200 milliseconds, and that's pretty standard all the platforms. All right, so moving on now, the more complicated method to do this, and the reason we bring this up is if you were looking at a sniffer or maybe you're looking at somebody has already formatted out a packet trace and maybe didn't use the session report so that you can find the summarized round trip time, or maybe the SYN packets weren't included, so you can get that nice delta right up front, then the other method is to actually find a data packet that goes outbound, take the sequence number of the data packet, you add the data bytes that were contained within that packet, and you add those two values together. That's the ending sequence number of the last byte of data in the packet. When we get an acknowledgement inbound that has that ACK number or higher, then that tells us that this packet has been received by the remote side and acknowledgement has been returned. So we now have a measurement of the round trip time. Again, this is a pretty simple example here. We typically have multiple packets in between, and I've got a good example of that later. So when we're looking at some of the bandwidth in the, you know, we, again, bandwidth does come into play. Just so we can see, you know, how successful we were at taking advantage of the network underneath. And so we do calculate a throughput in bytes. And, you know, in this case, we in the session summary, we'll give you kilobytes per second. If you don't do the summary report and you just have raw packets, there's really no way to do this without actually adding up all of the bytes that were sent and then dividing by the total time. If the connection has not wrapped the sequence number and you have the full transfer, you could start with the sequence number of the initial SYN packet and the sequence number of the final FIN packet that encapsulates the entire trace or data flow, subtract the two to get the number of bytes that were sent, and then divide by the time to get this value. If it's a very large transfer, multiple gig transfer, then those sequence numbers will wrap and there's no way to calculate that without some kind of a rising tool like the session summary. All right, and then based on the network device type that we think this network device is, that we've calculated, we do a summary here, and we've calculated the bandwidth utilization was about 52%. So we're not totally saturating the device that we're going over, but 52% is actually pretty good for any one session. Okay, so when we're, you know, one of the things we don't want to get into is when we look at a packet trace and we're looking at a session, we want to be able to somehow eliminate sessions that are good. And if we know what makes a session good, then we also know what makes a session bad. So how do we know a session's good? There's really three things that we kind of look for that show a good data transfer. First, that the slow start on the TCP session is actually working. So what that means is the TCP protocol has both a sending and a receiving flow control to control the flow of data. And what we want to see, the flow control on the sender side is called the congestion window. We want to see that congestion window grow over time in a nice, steady method. And as that congestion window grows, we steadily, assuming the application is streaming data like an FTP session will, that we slowly ramp up and take more and more advantage of the network bandwidth that is there. And as long as that's occurring and it's a nice, steady growth, then that's a good sign. If you're not getting duplicate acknowledgments or retransmitted packets, then that's a good sign. Duplicate acknowledgments indicate either packets are lost or packets are arriving out of order. And when those things occur, then we potentially have a slowdown on the session. And of course, retransmitted packets can occur due to duplicate acknowledgments or to a lack of an acknowledgment at all, and I've got an example of that later. And then, assuming we're not, you know, we've had a nice slow start and the congestion window is growing and the bandwidth utilization is ramping up nicely, we're not seeing any duplicate acts or retransmitted packets, that's all good. Then the other thing we want to see is really this constant data flow in the session summary. That's pretty easy to see. You just see large volumes of packets going outbound, and that's a good indication that we're taking advantage of the network and that the application is actually presenting data to us. You know, if it's not something like FTP, it's more real backbones application where there's logic in the application layer. Sometimes we see delays in the application that initially get attributed to network flow, and once we take a look at a packet trace, we say, no, there's nothing in the trace that shows that, and it's really a back-end application problem. So, you know, dispatching in the application layer might be the thing that's holding stuff up. So, assuming all those things are good, then we have a good session, and, you know, vice versa, if those things aren't good, then we have a bad session. So here's kind of a little snapshot of a session summary that's showing us the packets, and we can see, you know, if we look at the flagging over here, you can see there's a, let me see if I can grab this pointer here. So right here underneath this flags field, right, we got a lot of dots. Dots are good. There's no special flagging there. The thing that we were looking for, if we were looking for duplicate acts or retransmissions, the duplicate acts or retransmissions would be either an R for a retransmission or a U for a duplicate act. Now, a single duplicate act's not really an issue, and I'll cover why we need multiple duplicate acts later. But anytime there's a retransmission, there's definitely something that should perk your interest. All right? But in this case, everything looks good. We don't have any duplicate acts. We have no retransmissions. From a slow start perspective, a real quick way to find the packet flow, we're concerned about data packets when we're talking about slow start, the congestion window growing because data packets are arriving and being acknowledged. And so we can see this nice pattern here where we actually have, so we have two packets going out. And I usually look at the data segments or the data field to say, oh, there's a data packet. It's just a nice, easy way to find that. So we can see two data packets going out here. An acknowledgement comes in, which allows us to grow our congestion window. And then we can generate three packets and send them into the network. And so for every acknowledgement that arrives, acknowledging the fact that a data packet or two data packets has been received on a remote side allows us to increase our congestion window, which is the amount of packets we're allowed to have in the network. So we start out at two. We get an acknowledgement that says, okay, you can now put in three. And both those packets have left the network. So we can then generate three packets. Now remember, the remote side, when it sends this acknowledgement, it's probably going to be sending the acknowledgement when two packets arrive. So the first two packets have been acknowledged. I kind of overlaid the acknowledgement numbers with my tagging there. But if we had the acknowledgement number, we could actually look at this acknowledgement number underneath it here and determine that it acknowledges these first two data packets here. But the third one hasn't been acknowledged. So, in essence, the third one is from the sending side is still in the pipe. That's something that's still outstanding in the network. And now that our congestion window has grown from four, we're allowed to have four packets in the network. Since there's already one in there, we're only allowed to generate three new packets to the network. But at that particular point in time, we now have four packets that are in the network. And so if we kept following this along, what's going to happen is, you know, we get an acknowledgement when two packets are arriving. And so we kind of see this nice pattern of we had two packets, there's three packets, we're kind of bumping to four, now we're bumping to five, and we're bumping to six. And that's a good view of congestion window ramp up or the slow start process actually occurring correctly. And again, the constant data flow thing that we're looking for is when these acknowledgments come in, that immediately right after we look at the delta times, right after the acknowledgment arrives, then we see a group of packets built that kind of carries us up to the end of the congestion window or the end of the receive buffer. And we'll take a look at that windowing receive buffer a little bit later on. So this is a nice example of all three of those events that make up a good connection flow. All right, so now that we know what a good connection looks like, let's take a look at how this latency comes into play as far as affecting a data transfer. And remember, when we send a data packet, we have to receive an acknowledgement to let us know that that data packet's been processed all the way through the network. And these acknowledgements allow us to grow our congestion window as the sender. And it also, in these acknowledgements, advertises how much receive buffer space is available on the remote side. So once we send this data, if we think that we filled up that receive buffer, then we have to stop sending data until we get an acknowledgement that somehow tells us the receive buffer has more space. So as we send across from our sending side in this little quick example, we send packet 1, 2, 3, and 4, and we're pretending that other packets have all arrived earlier in the connection. So when data packet 1 arrives, we send out acknowledgement 1 to say, hey, this data packet's arrived, and it starts to flow back towards the sender. The sending side, once it sent that data segment 4, has determined either through congestion window or receive buffer size that it's not allowed to send any more data. So it basically stalls. So look in this second bracket here that as data packet 2 arrives and the acknowledgement is headed back towards the sender, we've got this gap here where the sender's not generating any new data, right? In time slice 4 or 3, we can see that, again, packet 2 is left. The receiver has now received 2 data packets since the last acknowledgement. It generates this ACK 3. To acknowledge data packet 3 has arrived. 4 is still in the pipe. Our gap is still growing because the acknowledgement hasn't arrived. Data packet 4 actually then arrives at the receiving side. Our ACK for 3 is still flowing. Our ACK for 1 finally arrives at the sender side. And that acknowledgement is either going to grow our congestion window, potentially update the receive buffer size, and that allows us the sender to generate new data 5. So as we can depict, all this time between the end of data packet 4 and data packet 5 is idle time on the network where we're not taking advantage of the network path, and that is the impact of the network latency. If we had zero latency, then there'd be no idle time there, and the flow would be very fast. So as we're dealing with network latency, and the longer that gap gets, the bigger the delay and the slower your total transfer. All right, so here's just a little snapshot of a connection that was actually flowing very well. We had very good data transfer rate here from a sending application side. We were growing the congestion window. The receiving side was consuming the data very fast. I'll point out right here that our receive window that we're getting in, actually, do I have an acknowledgement? Okay, here's an acknowledgement, an inbound acknowledgement. So the receive window on the remote side coming in is very big. So there's a very large receive buffer allowing us to stage lots of data either in that buffer or to place it in the network to arrive and be staged in the buffer. We don't actually have an indication of our current congestion window from a single packet perspective, but we can tell that, you know, if we were to calculate the distance between an acknowledgement, an inbound acknowledgement's ACK number, and the sequence number of the packet sent immediately in front of that, we know that our congestion window is currently allowing at least that many data packets to be sent. So what we're trying to just show here in this example is that we shoot out a packet here, right? It goes outbound. It's got this sequence number, and it's got 1448 bytes of data. By the time we receive the acknowledgement packet inbound for this, we've actually had 80 packets go inbound and outbound. So this is just a good example of a streaming connection, but it's one of the things that you have to run into and come up against when you're trying to look for delays and other anomalies in the trace, is that if you're really dealing with streaming, there can be a large number of packets between events that might be critical events. Okay, so here's a little snapshot of the window actually being closed. I've got a better example later on, but just to show you the mathematics of this. So what we're going to take a look at here is we've got this inbound acknowledgement. And so we take the acknowledgement number that's coming in, and we add the receive window. Adding those two together indicates the highest sequence number that would represent the end of the receive buffer space where the receiving TCP can stage the data. Right? So we're not allowed as a sender to exceed that sequence number. So when we send an outbound packet out, we can take the sequence number of our outbound packet and add our data bytes to it. And down below, you can see when we do this calculation down here and add the sequence numbers, we get 9063 ending sequence number. And that matches up with the inbound acknowledgement number and window size. So at this particular point, this connection is unable to send new data when this outbound packet goes out until we receive an acknowledgement that moves the acknowledgement number or the receive window number grows. So that ending sequence number moves to the right if you look at this from a linear scale, all right? And of course, the very next packet in has a higher sequence number or acknowledgement number than the previous one. The window size hasn't changed, which is pretty much telling us that the remote receive buffer is only 8280 in size, and all of the buffer is now available, especially when we see that pattern over and over. But as soon as this acknowledgement number and the receive window come in, if we mathematically added them together, it now allows us to send new sequence numbers or bytes into the pipe. And off we go, we send two more. Now that we kind of seen how the window kind of affects us and stops us from sending, the other thing we got to worry about when we're doing data transfer and it's not windowing is what happens when we have dropped packets or missing packets. And when we're dealing with, again, if we were to look at the summary and see in the overall statistical information that one or two packets got retransmitted or we had a very, very, very small percentage of duplicate acknowledgments in relation to maybe millions of packets being transferred, then, you know, in the context of that large data transfer, those small anomalies probably don't matter and are likely to be normal in your environment and not something that's triggering you to look at this as a performance problem. However, if those numbers increase or the amount of data that you're transferring or the life of the session is extremely short, then one or two of those anomalies can really have a negative impact on your throughput, and then we have to take a look at those and try and eliminate them. And, of course, anytime we have a consistent behavior of one of those duplicate acknowledgments or retransmitted packets, then you know, that time delay starts to grow that's related to those events, and that's certainly something that we got to take a look at. So when we have dropped packets, there's a couple of things that have to occur here. But when a packet gets dropped in the network, is actually lost or corrupted and has to be discarded along the way, it can certainly impact the windowing that's occurring, but we also require the acknowledgement number to arrive in order for us to know that packet's been received on the remote side. If we don't get an acknowledgement for that packet, then we have to retransmit it. And there's really two triggers to do the retransmission. We have the duplicate acknowledgements, can be a trigger called, it's our fast retransmit and recovery. Anytime there's three duplicate acknowledgements, it's a trigger for us to immediately retransmit and try to resume sending additional packets. There is some effect on the throughput on the connection, and I'll cover that. The other thing is if we don't have enough packets to trigger FRR, then we have to retransmit based on timer. I've got a little graphical depiction of that. So let's move on and really take a look at kind of the effect of a dropped packet when we get to take advantage of FRR. And FRR, again, is that fast retransmit and recovery. And this is the... If we're going to have dropped packets, this is the event that we want to occur. We want to have FRR recover the flow because we have the least amount of delay and it has the least negative impact on the connection. And for streaming type of connections, this activity is very normal when you have packet loss, where FRR will actually kick in and recover the session. Don't want to have packet loss, but when it does occur, FRR is going to be the saving grace. Okay? So as we can see here in our depiction, packet 2 is kind of getting bumped out of the data flow. Some kind of data corruption occurred. And we're going to generate the acknowledgement ACK1A, and off it goes, headed back towards the sending side. As data packet 3 arrives in time slice 2, we never received data packet 2. So when we generate the acknowledgement is still acknowledging data packet 1. Right? We're calling that 1B just for simplistic namings here. But off ACK1B goes, it starts to head back to the sender to say, you know, you're going to get ACK1A, but I received something that is not in order. It's not the next packet expected, and the next packet I expect is the one at ACK number 1, or in our case, we're going to label it 1B. So as data packet 4 arrives, we're going to generate another duplicate acknowledgement acknowledging ACK1 or data packet 1, and the same thing's going to occur when data packet 5 arrives. So off we go. ACK1 arrives, business as usual there, no new information. So then we got this little gap, and then we have these three duplicate acknowledgements. When those duplicate acknowledgements arrive at the sender side, it triggers the FRR, which immediately says, hey, data packet 2 was never received, so we generate data packet 2 again, and based on the congestion window and other factors, if we're still allowed to present new data into the connection, then we can send data packet 6, so we can resume our streaming activities. And as data packet 2 arrives, we'll get an acknowledgement for that, and, you know, again, our session will just continue as normal. So the case where we maybe have a very, very large number of packets lost, so we can't generate those three duplicate acknowledgments, or maybe we're in a very simple request-response type model of application where either the request or the response doesn't contain enough data to formulate enough packets to trigger FRR. So we can't have, you know, at a minimum, we need 4, one lost packet and 3 additional packets behind that to generate the 3 duplicate ACKs, which is our triggering event. So an example, again, we're going to lose data packet 2, and we're going to generate our ACK1A, our ACK1B. Here we go, data packet 4 arrives, and we generate ACK1C. And as these arrive and 1C arrives, now 1A is an original acknowledgement, 1B and 1C are duplicates, but there's only 2 of those. So as that arrives at the sender side, we don't have the third duplicate acknowledgement. We cannot immediately retransmit data packet 2 because we don't have the triggering event for that, and we have to remain idle until the retransmission timer expires, at which point we send data packet 2. So anytime we have this retransmission timer expiration required to deliver or retransmit a packet, this hourglass here is very large in relation to total time. The default retransmission timeout is a half a second. You're dealing with data transfers that might be taking less than a half a second to complete. If there's no dropped packet, then one of these dropped packets, you know, can double your total transfer time. Definitely not a good event to occur. Okay, so what do those duplicate acknowledgments look like when we're looking at a packet trace summary or the session report? And the U, again, is the flag for duplicate acknowledgment. So when we see those 3 duplicate acknowledgment packets there, then we know that that's a triggering event for FRR to kick in, and the TCP stack immediately retransmitted the packet that was being acknowledged. If you look at the ACK number over here in these duplicate acknowledgments is N32871, and the sequence number of the retransmitted packet going outbound is 32871. So we know that that was the missing one, and we retransmitted that. Because that was the only packet that went out, I can tell very quickly that either my congestion window or my receive buffer is preventing me from streaming the next packet outbound within my data stream. And I'm waiting on an inbound acknowledgement before I can do other activities. Interestingly enough, you can see all of these other U's underneath of here. All of these other U's are indicating that missing packet that we just retransmitted, there were many other packets in the network behind it, and as each one of those packets arrives, the receiving side generates a new duplicate acknowledgement. And this is just kind of transitioning events within the network. And, of course, the higher the latency in the network, the longer the time that or the bigger the scope of time that these events can occur. All right, and if we kind of followed along and kind of looked at this trace of that retransmitted packet, if I had to walk down through all of the acknowledgments, if we looked at all the I packets, the inbound packets, they're still at that 32.871 as duplicate packets arrive, 32.871, and we continue to retransmit. Now, these transmissions we're seeing here, notice that the sequence numbers are changing. This is the windowing and congestion window allowing us to insert new packets into the network as the duplicate acknowledgments are arriving. But finally, what we get is we get an acknowledgment packet that acknowledges at a minimum that missing packet. And that allows us to know that it's been received and we can start moving forward in the actual data flow and the connection. All right, so that's a nice example of FRR actually working successfully. Does temporarily stall the flow on the connection, but it does allow us to immediately retransmit without waiting the half-second time delay. All right, so let's take a look again, a little bit closer look at what happens when the receive buffer or the window size goes to zero. And basically, again, as we're sending data, we have to ensure that we don't overrun the buffer space on the receiving side's TCP stack. So as the advertised window comes in on the acknowledgement packets and we formulate our data packets, we can't send any data that goes beyond that ending sequence number, right? Some of the events that kind of are typical for causing the receive window to go to zero, the number one thing is either the back-end application is got a lot of processing that has to occur as data arrives, and the network flow and the sending application is actually able to overrun that, or your CPU starved, or your dispatching priority is not correct on the receiving application if this is critical and needs to consume the data. And there are times that we'll actually find that the application is hung, and typically from an IP perspective, the application is dealing with multiple sockets and maybe it's waiting to either receive or send data on a different socket and it's unable to come over and service this socket and receive the data that out of the buffer and allow that receive window to grow. So let's take a quick look at the little graphical example of the window size going to zero. But we're in our example here, we sent data packet 10. And we get an acknowledgement packet in from the remote side for ACK 9 or data packet 9. It says window of 1. And so these two events really tell me that after I send data packet 10, there is no more buffer space on the receiving side. I can't send any more data. We kind of got this idle time here kind of depicting that. We also show that when data packet 10 arrives, it gets acknowledged, but the window size is now 0, which is just reconfirming we can't send any more data. And until we get a new window update, even though there's data to send from the sending side, we're going to remain idle. When the application on the receiving side finally receives the data or receives some of the data, we now are going to get a window update. So we get acknowledgement. There's no new data has arrived over the network, so it's still ACK for 10, but the window size has now grown, saying you can send me 4 new things. We still... Again, coming into play for our network latency, we still have to wait this entire time for it to arrive to the sender. Once it's received at the sender side, then the sender can start to generate up to 4 new packets worth of data. And so we immediately ship data 11. We'll poke out 12, 13, and 14, at which point we'd have to stop because now there's no more received buffer space or window size. And, of course, as 11 arrives, the window size shrinks. But the sender already knows that it only had 4 windows worth or 4 data packets worth of data. So, you know, it has stopped sending, even though it hasn't got that ACK for 11 in window of 3 yet. All right. So here's just a quick example in the session report of the window size going to zero with the mathematical calculations to show that. We have an outbound data packet, and we have a data byte count. Down here, we'll see the math. When we add those up, it ends up at 43,746. We've got an inbound acknowledgement that comes in. The ACK packet is, you know, we have the acknowledgement number, the receive window. When we add those two up down here, we end up with the same sequence number. Thus, at this point, the sender is unable to send any more data. It's already sent the last sequence number that would fill the window. And as these acknowledgement packets arrive, the acknowledgement number is moving forward, but the receive window is also shrinking. So when we add those two together, we still end up at the exact same 3746 number, and we're not allowed to move forward. And you can see later on in the trace as we bury down here, the acknowledgement number keeps moving up. And in this case, we actually received an acknowledgement number for the final data packet that we sent, the 16-byte data packet, and the window size is now zero. And it took it almost 6/10 of a second for the remote application to receive enough data to send out a new window update, and it read 3736 bytes of data. And so we get that update, and now we're able to send. So this is a nice stall that's really an application delay on the receiving side. All right. Things that we can look at, again, just to rehash, is we're really looking for the round-trip time as round-trip time or the network latency comes into play. Primarily, you know, if we're looking at different sessions and different data transfers to different endpoints, where maybe one transfer, somebody's complaining that transfer is slow, and another customer, you know, is satisfied with the transfer. They may be different endpoints, and the round trip time or network latency could be completely different. So we need to take a look at those when we look at a packet trace to see, you know, we're comparing apples to apples. We're going to look at some of these statistical things to look for the bytes that we transferred, the amount of time spent on anomalies within the trace. Some amount of unacknowledged data kind of gives us an indication of how much data we actually were able to insert in the pipe, how large our congestion window grew, and how effectively we consumed the receive buffer that was advertised by the remote side. The other things we're going to look at is some of those anomaly things, statistical counters that we've got. We're going to look for the duplicate acts, retransmitted packets, out-of-order packets, zero window size. We do give you a number for those. Fragments we have in there, if you're not really losing packets, then fragments aren't really a concern per se. If you do have retransmitted packets, then any amount of fragmentation that's occurring because you're maybe have differing sizes of network segments within your overall network can be a big issue as soon as you start having retransmitted packets, because missing parts of a packet can be lost with an individual fragment, and we want to avoid those. And then we kind of give you a nice little summary of all the other information related to it as far as the number of packets that flew back and forth. There's not much else there, but again, some of the things we'll look at in the session, report total duration. And why I'm pointing this out is, again, you may have collected within your packet trace 100 different sessions between the two partners, and one or two of those maybe had problems. So, you know, running down through and looking at the total duration time might be a quick way to jump in and say, this is the one that had the problem. Let's see, what actually occurred here. We also have to take into account that not all transfers, maybe between two endpoints, if there were multiple that occurred, sent the same amount of data or repeats of the data transfer. You know, somebody might not have been just testing an FTP. There might have been real application flows that are occurring and differing data content. So we need to take a look at the number of bytes that were transferred. You know, if there's retransmitted bytes, we do indicate that. That's a very nice indicator to look for problems. The higher that number is, the worse off, right? And then we're looking for the throughput. We're just looking to see, when you look at these averages comparing one session to another, you know, was one of these sessions' throughput number very, very low? And if it is, then go key in on that. And then, you know, average time to acknowledge data, if that number grows and is very high, then that's an indication that we either have lots of retransmissions or that the packet flow is causing delay act to kick in. We're not sending two packets at once, but a single packet. And so as that number grows for the average act time, then the total transfer time is going to increase. Right? Other things we can look at here is the window that's advertised. So we have the largest and average and smallest window sizes. So those are kind of nice numbers to see to give you an idea. Certainly if the smallest window advertised ever gets down to zero or very small, then we know that we had some windowing or application delay on the receiving side, something to take a look at. And, of course, you know, we do have the maximum amount of data that was ever in the pipe, which is an indication of both how well we took advantage of the receive buffer, on the remote side and how large our congestion window actually grew. And again, as long as the connection's stable, we're not losing any packets, and the sending application is presenting lots of data to send, then the congestion window should be able to grow all the way up to the receive window size, the maximum receive window size, assuming that there were no errors in the connection. So we're always trying to take a look to make sure that that maximum data in the pipe reached receive window size. If it's a very low latency connection like local LAN, we may not quite get there just because the network latency prevents us from actually saturating the network. Right? And again, we're looking for our percentages in the packet counters just to see if anything jumps out, especially in the anomalies of the duplicate ACKs and zero windows, retransmissions, things like that. Right? And then, of course, remember these symbols over here on the left when you're looking inside the individual packets themselves to look for, our duplicate ACKs, the zero window size retransmission. And fragments, again, are only key if you're getting retransmissions. Here's a couple of little links that can give you a little bit more information. And in summary, I've got some command examples of collecting packet trace and an informational APAR that gives more detailed information, right? And here's an example of how to format a packet trace within IPCS. Let me just point this out. Underneath of the options section here, if you put SES or session, then we'll format it out in that session format. All right, and then we've got a couple of links to some troubleshooting guides that we've recently published, or not recently, but some nice key things to go look at if you need more information. And that's the end of the session.